Welcome to In the Spotlight, a new podcast where I talk to some interesting artists and figures and find out more about their life and their work. Today, I am joined by Annie Dresner.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you, Annie?
I'm good. It's not as warm as when I saw you last.
Oh, yeah.
In Focus Wales, in Wrexham.
It's quite sunny here today, though. I don't know about what your weather's like there.
To be fair, it is sunny here. So it's sort of like when I last saw you.
Yeah. It's a bit deceptive, though, isn't it? Unless you're in the sun, it's still cold a little bit.
That's true. I feel like I'm very British now, speaking about that, as an immediate opening of this conversation.
I know, I was going to ask you how you were, and we went on to the weather, didn't we, straight away?
British.
Very British. I wanted to get you on to talk about your new single, For the Thrill of It. It talks about minor transgressions, doesn't it? Such as touching wet paint or pressing the emergency button of an elevator, as you like to say in America. But you talk about the deeper meaning of it, that it highlights misogyny in the music industry. I found that quite a unique way of addressing an important issue. How did you come up with that?
Well, to be honest, I wrote two songs that day. One's going to be on my next record, but this one, and so I wrote that one first. So usually how I write songs is like more from a personal perspective, whether it's personal to me or not. I write it from like my point of view or the singer's point of view of but then I just kind of thought, I basically, when I was sitting around, I just came up with the first line of the song, which was, "Do you touch art at museums?" Because I was just kind of trying to think about a way to highlight the fact that, you know, without consent, you're not meant to really touch people. So I was thinking, that line popped in my head, and then I just kind of went with it and had a lot of fun writing the song, because it's kind of, I mean, the subject matter is not funny, but the lyrics are a bit funny in the sense that it's so obvious that you shouldn't do it. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but I just kind of thought I would try to write the song in a different way as I came up with that line, and just kind of went with it. And I think it's worked out as a song.
Yeah, because it's still got that humor there, isn't it? That little bit of cheekiness to it, but it's still a serious subject, which is interesting because usually songs about that kind of subject are much more, I don't know, maybe seriously confessional, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say that's very true of the other one that you'll hopefully hear at some point. But like this one, the humor part wasn't to be like, haha, it's a funny subject. It was more to kind of, in a way, like, highlight how ridiculous it is for somebody to think that they can do things that they really should know they can't. So it was kind of, in a way, making fun of the person doing it, just thinking like, hey, like, it's this obvious, like, how could you even think you could do these things, if that makes any sense. Definitely not making light of the actual subject matter.
No, and I suppose when I first heard it, and I didn't really know what it was about, I thought you were talking about sort of moments of sort of finding your inner child and things like that. But I suppose it is, in a way, isn't it, as well? The actual incidents you talk, you know, you sing about, sort of things we shouldn't do as a, you know, as an adult maybe, or just in life. And we do them anyway because they're kind of fun, you know, to step out of your normal everyday being good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I could have put the song out and not said why I wrote it.
Yeah.
And I think the song could have stood like on its own as a song. And I think people still would have hopefully connected to it.
Yeah.
But I feel like it makes it a better song to say why I wrote it. And I don't generally speak about like the specifics of why I have written a song. But for this one, I just felt that the conversation needed to happen because I feel like so many people have these conversations and know and are upset by certain behaviors, but yeah. But it's not a conversation that's maybe openly discussed, which I can understand. But I also just felt like if I spoke about it, because I was scared to speak about it. So I thought if I spoke about it, maybe other people would feel empowered to stand up for themselves and think, actually, no, like I have a right to not like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's so common, isn't it? Which is just, you know, it's one of those, like you said, it's something that people or artists will talk about to each other, but not always in public, because they feel like, you know, they might get in trouble, or they might, you know, it might open a can of worms. But actually, you're right. It's very brave to talk about it, because there are a lot of other people going through it. And there's a lot of obviously well-documented cases that we've seen in recent years that, you know, on a bigger scale, but also, like you said, the minor transgressions and the minor misogyny often are things that, you know, men need to call it out as well in the music industry. So here I am calling it out.
Thank you, Bill. I think some of the behavior, I think the lyrics that I chose in the song are about things that are like you could do it or not. Like they're looked past. And I think like a lot of the behaviors that bothered me personally, and I'm not going to speak specifically about what they are, but the behaviors that have bothered me personally have been things that I feel are looked at in a very similar way. Just like probably shouldn't do it, but you can get away with it.
And yeah, because the man in that situation maybe has a bit of a power or control in a.
Well, that's it. That's right. Mm. Yeah. And I also want to say very clearly that I mostly work with men, like, not because I'm not choosing to work with women, but like I work with a lot of men. I'm friends with a lot of men. Yeah. My experience of this is a very small minority of men. But I've been doing music for like 14 years, and there have been a handful of things that have stood out in my mind. And again, not that many compared to how many years I've been doing it and how many people I know, but those things, like years ago, something happened and I didn't want to play. I didn't play a show for a year after that. Mm-hmm. So like, my point is like little things that might seem little,
yeah,
aren't that little. I keep calling them little things because that's how it's framed.
Like, yeah, because from the male perspective, maybe they don't even think about it, but maybe they should think about it. You know, boundaries, isn't it? You know,
maybe I just
treating someone with respect. You know, you're working with.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I just think it's a mutual respect thing, and like maybe if you wouldn't say it to a guy, maybe don't say it to a woman. And I also want to point out, like, because somebody was asking me online, like, oh, well, they were saying, well, this happens to men as well. And like, I acknowledge that too. The song that I wrote is from the perspective of my own perspective. So from being a woman, but I just think generally it's like mutual respect, and then everything could be like cool and a lot more fun, you know?
Yeah. And how did the collaboration with Catherine Williams happen?
So I know Catherine Williams through my friend Polly Palesma, and then I met Catherine again when I was, because she's good friends with David Ford, who I did a project with as well. And so I met her through both of those friends of mine, and she and I have kept in touch, and I sent her and become friends. And I sent her my song to see, just to play it to her and just see, you know, what she thought of it. And she really liked it, which was really nice. And because she's such a great musician and singer, I just thought, she likes the song, I'll ask her if she wants to sing on it. And I was really happy when she wanted to sing on it. So that's how that happened.
Great. It's nice when things just happen organically, isn't it, like that?
Definitely. And by the way, just because I want, like, just as an aside, my favorite record of last year was Catherine Williams and Withered Hand, the Wilson Williams record. Yep. Did you hear that?
Yep.
I love it.
Really good.
Really, really good. Yeah.
Is For the Thrill of It part of a new album or EP you're working on?
So it's actually a standalone single. I wanted to try to put it out around International Women's Day time. So it came out the 21st of February, a little bit earlier, frankly, because I'm going on tour and I wanted to have time to focus on releasing it a few weeks before then. But yeah, so I've put it out around with International Women's Day in mind. And it's, yeah, just a standalone single, though there will be a version of it on my next record, but cool, like a very different production and stuff.
And you mentioned you wrote another song at the same time. So will that be on the album or the EP or...?
It will be. So yeah, I'm currently I've been working on a record with the Americana singer-songwriter, Peter Bruntnell.
Okay.
I met Peter in October and I don't know. I don't think I knew his music then, but I recognized him because I must have followed him on Instagram or something. And so I was like, wait, are you Peter? And he was like, I am. Anyway. And so then that night on my way home from London, I listened to his music for a few hours. And I loved, honestly, every one of his songs. And I'd been thinking for a while about how to make my next record. And I've made the last few and this single at home, which with my husband, Paul Goodwin. And I just, as much as I like the records we've made, I just thought it would be fun to try to work with someone else as well on the next project, just to have it be a little bit different. So I was speaking to Peter and suggested maybe co-writing something because I really love to do that. And then I was like, by the way, who produced your last record? Because it sounds great. And he said that he had produced it. So we started working on my next record, honestly, about a week later. We met up and we've been working on it since. So we're basically done. And that was a very long-winded answer to your question, but I'm working on that record and we're almost done recording it and I'm excited for it.
Right. I suppose linked to that a little bit is, how have your last 12 months been since you released your I Thought It Would Be Easier album?
Yeah. So I put the record out in April and I toured it. I had a headline tour for 2 or 3 weeks. Or something like that. And that was really fun and I enjoyed it a lot. And then I did some supports in the summer. I did one show supporting Badly Drawn Boy, which was very cool. And then I did about 6 shows with Bernard Butler, which were also really awesome. And so that was kind of my summer. I did a couple festivals and then I had a very quiet fall or autumn, which was also really nice because it had been such a busy year kind of building up to releasing that record. And then, so I didn't really have many shows in the autumn. I can't remember if I really had any, but I then started working on this record with Peter and working on this single. And now I'm about to be quite busy because I'm doing a 3-week tour supporting Danny and the Champions of the World that starts. Yeah, that's throughout March.
Cool.
And then trying to get this record done. So
yeah, busy. Linked to that, actually, my next question was going to be listed the people you've just toured with, and you've got any dream tours left?
Any dream tours? Yes, yes. Yeah. I would love to support Bell and Sebastian. I'd love to support Weller. Those are my top. I think those would be very cool. Oh, Rilo Kiley's back together. I'd love to support Rilo Kiley. That'd be very cool.
Yeah. What's your favorite Bell and Sebastian album?
Okay, I'm very bad at names. I'm really notoriously bad, and I think it's because when I was listening to a lot of music, it was on people just gave me mixes of things, so I never knew what it was from. But The Life Pursuit, probably.
Yeah.
But I like them all. But I do like that
2006.
Record.
Yeah, I definitely check really out fun. Tiger Milk if you're feeling sinister, yeah, that kind of thing as well. Yeah, they're honestly, the earlier ones, the earlier albums that they recorded in a church, actually, some of them.
That's cool.
Yeah. Are there any other artists you're sort of enjoying at the moment or albums?
Again, terrible at this. It's a Waxahachie song that everybody's listening to. You know the one. Right Back to It.
Yeah.
Good. What else am I enjoying? Oh, actually, so I was just at Folk Alliance International in Montreal last week, and I really like Toria Woof. She has a record coming out soon. We were doing an In the Round together. So her new record, based on, and I've listened to her first few singles, it's going to be really good. So okay. I've been listening to that, like the singles that are out. I'd recommend. Yeah, her songs, That's What Falling in Love Will Do and Lefty's Motel Room.
Okay.
I don't know what her record's going to be called, but.
How do you spell her name? It's just for Google purposes.
Yeah, Toria and then Wooff. So I think she's very good. Also, I saw Joel Plaskett play a song that I really liked as well called High Summer. And I mean, I watched his set. So he was really good. He's a Canadian artist.
Actually, I was talking to someone at PRS in Wales a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about artists who are making a lot of money from writing songs for sleep playlists.
I've heard about this, actually.
Obviously, if somebody just says to Alexa, play me songs to fall asleep to, or, you know, play my sleep playlist, or whatever they say, then it just comes up with these songs that are on this playlist. And so obviously they've got millions of streams. The only problem is some of them are fake artists. So that's the only problem. But he was telling me about a few artists from the 80s who've actually made a load of money from this, you know, this idea. So
yeah.
If you ever fancy making any songs to fall asleep to, then
I mean, maybe.
It's just funny, isn't it? Because like the way music, or the way discovery of music goes now, it's all algorithmic, isn't it? A lot of it. So
yeah, that's true. That is true. I wouldn't say no. I wouldn't put it out under my name. I'd put it out under a Bill Cummings sleep music.
He will put you to sleep. not literally. He was saying that a lot of the problem is a lot of these artists are fake, you know, who and they're actually, they're made by a company, or it's actually a shell company of Spotify, which is a bit mad, isn't it? Yeah. There's actually a great article by a lady called Jen Pelly who looked into that whole issue anyway. I saw you were Get Played by Gideon Coe and Mark Riley.
This has been fun. Yeah, they've played the song four times, which has been cool.
I suppose it just shows you like the power of radio still, you know, doesn't it? You know?
It's really nice. Like Gideon Coe, I sent Gideon Coe my record Coffee at the Corner Bar in 2020, and he's been very supportive of a lot of my music since then. And Mark Riley, when they had the show again like last year together, Mark, I guess, heard my music then, and they've both been really supportive. So I'm really, it means a lot to me, for real. Like,
have you done a six music session yet?
I did. I went in April with the last record, and I did four tracks live. So that was really fun.
I thought you had. I wasn't sure. I didn't want to see.
That was cool. That was like one of the things that I really wanted to do.
It was on your bucket list.
Like very much so, yeah. So yeah. That was a really exciting kind of cool day for me. I really enjoyed it a lot, actually.
So what are the future plans have you got? You've already talked about this a little bit. I suppose it'll go hand in hand with the album, will it?
So, yeah, basically I'm doing a tour with Danny and the Champions of the World, which will be really nice. I don't know when it will be, but I know I have some touring plans for later in the year, probably lining up. And yeah, this record, I don't know when it's coming out, but I'm really excited about it. I think it's honestly going to be quite good. Are you allowed to say that about your own music?
Yeah, you got to have confidence in you.
No, but I think it's, and honestly, like, it was so lucky to meet Peter. I know we spoke about him earlier, but
yeah,
he, I really feel like he's like the perfect producer for these songs. And it's been 100% just like really fun to work on this record. And I feel so fortunate that I'm working with someone who he's so good at producing, but and like really cares, but also he's such a good songwriter that it's such a benefit to have like a really good songwriter producing the record because of their understanding of songwriting, if that makes any sense. And also just like delivery and like in terms of like vocal delivery and like trying things like different to sing things maybe in a different way than I would. And then like, I don't know, I like collaborating with people and, and I feel like the record is, I just feel like he's done such a great job with it and I'm really excited about it, honestly. So yeah, we're still like today, after we finish this, I have to send some more guitars through and it's starting to come together. So it's getting exciting.
And do you work remotely like that production or is it, do you go into a studio in the end or how does it work?
We actually recorded it at Peter's house.
Oh, okay.
So when we did the drums and the bass, he basically made his entire house into like a studio and his neighbors were very kind and let us record or like, you know, were very nice about us recording drums and bass there. And so, yeah, I was there. I've gone, Peter lives in Surrey. So I've been, gone there a number of times for recording. So I did the vocals there and did the, I was there for the week when we did like the band. And then, other times. So we've done most of it together, which I think was a better way to do it. I'm just doing some backing vocals at home because we already have the main vocal take. So that's easy to match. And then just a couple like guitars just because of time and we live pretty far away from each other. So the things, but I think we did like the main stuff together. And I think that was beneficial for the record.
And you mentioned you like working with other people. You did quite a few different things with David Ford, didn't you? Does it give you a different perspective working with different people? You know, is that what you like about it?
I'm quite social, so I like that aspect of it. Because being a solo singer-songwriter is a lot of time on your own. And I like people, but... No, in terms of the music, like with David, we wrote that record. We made a record called 48 Hours. This is 3 years ago now. And we wrote it a couple days after meeting. We did like, I was his tour support and we sang together on a few songs. So we had a few shows in January and then we had like a whole month in March. And we had about a month in between. And after the first few days in January, I got COVID and we were going to try to write one song together, but we just wound up writing a bunch because I had like nothing else to do. So I don't know. So that was fun. But like what I like to do is if I have like a little bit of a song that I have, like let's say I wrote something and I know it's like a good chorus, for example, but I've absolutely no idea what to do with the rest of it. It's really fun thinking of who I could send it to that I think that song would suit. And then they could send something else back. And it's kind of just like putting together like a puzzle. I don't know if you've ever done that, it's like a drawing game where like one person draws a head and then you like flip it over and then another person draws like the torso and then the legs,
I don't know what it's called, but I've played that,
but that's kind of how I like co-writing. And then at the end once you have it, you'd make it probably look congruent as a song.
Something recognizable.
I enjoy it because oftentimes, especially if you're writing with people that are good, like they're gonna obviously have good ideas And so
actually I was going to ask you that actually, because you play solo a lot. Have you ever thought of having like a band as well?
Yeah, definitely. It's just it's expensive. But yeah, I would like to play with a band. I think, yeah, just if I could, like 100%, if I could afford to travel and tour with a band,
yeah,
I would, because I think it'd be fun. And I think based on like how I record music, it would definitely suit the songs, because they are recorded as a band for the most part. But I do have a show at the Grace on the 8th of November in London.
Okay.
That will be a band.
Cool.
And those tickets are on sale, by the way. But that will be as a band. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you mentioned, it can be more expensive, can't it? That's why so many solo artists are doing so well. It's a hard old world out there, especially with things like Brexit and stuff like that. If you're, you know, you've got multiple people.
Yeah, I think like if you're not a solo artist with a band and you're just a whole band together and you're all invested in that band,
yeah, that's a different
way, then that's different. I did go as a trio in April on my tour, which I enjoyed, and it was with my friends Gary Stewart and Ed Blunt. Gary Stewart, he could play so many instruments; it was great. He plays the drums, the bass, and the guitar, but he could play like part of the drums and the bass or guitar at the same time. And then Ed also plays, I don't think he plays bass. Do you, Ed, if you're listening? But Ed plays, he played keys on the tour, but he also plays other instruments. But I think it sort of almost sounded like four instruments because of the way that Gary was able to play, which was kind of cool.
So we're running out of time here, but I'm going to thank you, Annie, and hopefully see you at another festival soon. Are you going to play any festivals this summer, or you were going to wait until the album comes out?
I have, at the moment, I'm playing the Trowbridge Festival, which is on the 27th of July, and having some conversations about festivals, but don't know which. I was really hoping to try to play Cambridge, but that one's sadly not happening.
So keep your eyes on Annie's social media and website. What are your social medias?
Oh, so my website is Annie Dressner, AnnieDressner.com. And if you go on that website and click on the mailing list, I send something out, like if I remember, on the first of every month, and usually not more than that. And that's a really good way to know what I'm doing. And also basically all my social medias, if you just look up Annie Dressner, that'll be me.
Great. Thank you, Annie.
Thank you so much, Bill.
You're welcome. And
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for talking to me. You've been listening to In the Spotlight with Annie Dressner and myself, Bill Cummings. Until the next time, ta-da.
Hi, Bill. Ta-da.
Okay, we're going to play out with For the Thrill of It by Annie Dressner, featuring Catherine Williams.
Do you touch art at museums? Smudge window panes? Do you pull threads out of sweaters just to break them? Do you press the emergency buttons near elevator doors? Take coins from slot machines, the ones who are winners but aren't yours. For the thrill of it, for the thrill of it, what makes you want it? six single items from a multi-pack. You know they're not for resale. You're not meant to buy them like that. Do you film it?